Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Here he is. I'm still reeling from the temperature, the cold rain, the weather. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio. I'm going to need that from you in a couple of minutes here, Ms. Garris. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio, weekdays 1 to 3, Saturdays 10 to noon. Don't miss the Mincing Rascals podcast, which we record on Thursdays. Do you listen to podcasts? They're all the rage, you know. And the Mincing Rascals, starring Steve Bertrand, Patty Vasquez, Justin Kaufman, me, Eric Zorn from the Tribune, Scott Stannis from the Tribune, was judged best in the city last year. They're going to announce the new award winners this year. I like our chances. The guys are really good. I MC and they kick around a bunch of interesting subjects. The Mincing Rascals is the podcast you should listen to about and from Chicago. By the way, last time we did the Mincing Rascals, it was Steve Bertrand who went off on a little tangent tear. He had something to say about Bill Barr's use of the word spy when he was describing the investigation by the federal government into the Trump campaign and the Russians. He said they were spying on the Trump campaign. Bill Barr said that. And Bertrand took umbrage with that. He said he thought that was an inappropriate use of that word. Lo and behold, in Eric's newscast just now, that topic came up again. Bill Barr used the term spying, and he still uses it. He says he doesn't use it pejoratively. He's defending that. I, at the time Bertrand brought it up, said, I'm not real bothered by that. I said, Steve, this is a semantic issue. You're worried about that word? And he really was. And the more I think about that, the more I'm coming around to Bertrand's views on this. It seems to me that when you say they were spying on the Trump campaign, that suggests that there's something nefarious or illicit about the FBI's intent in investigating what the Trump people were doing. But it was a legal process. It was run through layers of the FBI. It was approved by judges, most of whom were appointed by Republicans, for something that was important to investigate. So that's an investigation, and I guess you don't tell everybody you're investigating them as you do. Maybe that's your definition of spying, but that literal word spying does make it sound like it's an overreach or that it's underhanded by the government, that it's wrong for them to do that to the campaign. And I don't feel that way at all. So now I'm starting to feel like Barr should just throw up his hands and say, yeah, my bad. I know you hear spy differently than the way I hear spy. I shouldn't have said spy. But he's defending the use of that word. One other thing about the president, and then we'll move on to different subjects here. He gave Tiger Woods the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which seems utterly appropriate to me. Tiger Woods is in keeping with the kinds of people that do get that award. You know, they excel at their sport. They also overcome obstacles, and they're likable, and they're charismatic, and sometimes they have something really stellar about their career or a particular performance, and then they win an award. It did seem to be a little impulsive. You could see the president sitting there watching the Masters on TV saying, by golly, I'm going to give that guy the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Somebody call Tiger Woods, and it happened. But if it had been a more drawn-out process, if you still come to the conclusion that Tiger Woods gets the award, I think most of us would agree with that. The thing that sort of jumped out at me yesterday when Tiger wins the award is that when he came out to, when he receives the award from the president, he was dressed in the very same clothes that the president was wearing. He had the dark suit on, the white shirt, the long red tie. And at first I thought it was kind of a, I know gag isn't the right word, but he looked so much like Donald Trump's clothes that I thought they were going to reference it, like mini he or something, or I don't know what the bit would have been, but it looked almost comical to me that Tiger was dressed. And we know what Tiger looks like, and I don't know what we all make of his fashion sense, but to ape Donald Trump's attire looked weird to me. It was just odd. But there he was, and he won the award. So he wins it for golf. Donald Trump also gave the Presidential Medal to Alan Page for football, Roger Staubach, the famous quarterback, and Babe Ruth posthumously. Ruth had not won the Presidential Medal for Freedom. I don't recall exactly what the circumstances were that drove the president in 2018, it says here, to do it, but Trump has given out four of them in his 2 years in office. Nobody gave out more Presidential Medals of Freedom to athletes than Barack Obama, who I think fashioned himself as a bit of an athlete and sure did like his sports. Barack Obama gave the Medal of Freedom to Michael Jordan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Vin Scully, that was my Vin Scully, Willie Mays, Yogi Berra, Charles Sifford, S-I-F-F-O-R-D, a golfer, Ernie Banks, Dean Smith, Pat Summitt, Stan Musial, Bill Russell, Billie Jean King. 12 in 8 years for Obama. He did it every year but one that he was in office. Then you've got George W. Bush, who gave the Presidential Medal to Buck O'Neill in baseball, Frank Robinson, the baseball great, Muhammad Ali, Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Roberto Clemente, John Wooden, and Hank Aaron. Hank Aaron hadn't received it yet.
Where's the hockey players, man?
I believe they're ineligible because they're hockey players.
Oh, they're getting them from Trudell.
Yeah, I was just going to say, who would be the American... I know, there's a lot of great ones, but that's the fourth of our four sports. Maybe Lapka doesn't agree with that.
I grew up with hockey being my favorite, so I'm a little biased.
Well, does Bobby Hull have one?
That's a good question. Does anyone?
Was Bobby born in the United States? I don't know if you have to be an American. Let's see here. These all look like Americans, right? I would imagine you have to be an American to get the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and a lot of them were born in Canada or Finland or Russia or someplace.
Bobby Hull is Canadian.
He's Canadian, so maybe he's ineligible. Stan Mikita?
I thought he's
a Blackhawk. I don't know.
Yeah.
What more do you need to know? Esposito's? I don't know if they were born in the USA.
He was born in Slovakia, I believe, but, you know, then went to Canada.
So who would be the greatest American-born hockey player?
Let me think about that one for a second.
Come back to me, and then we'll award the Lapka Medal of Freedom to a hockey player. So I want, before the end of the show, give me your three Lapka Medal of Freedom Award recipients in hockey. All right, Lauren?
Okay, I can do that.
Bill Clinton only gave one. That was to Arthur Ashe. He was in 8 years. Only one. And George H.W. Bush, Bush 41, only gave two. One to Ted Williams and one to Richard Petty. So there's your Presidential Medal of Freedom's updates. By the way, Producer Olaf, do we know what is the average temperature for today? Steve, what did you say the current, what did Eric say the current temperature is? Is it 43 degrees right now?
Yeah, I think we're closer to 50, but I don't have it in front of me right now.
Bye. Let me pull it up here. If somebody could be in trouble for today's weather, boy, would they be in trouble. I'm just saying, 44. Olaf, Producer Olaf, what is the average temperature today, please?
On May 8th, the average high temperature is 68 degrees, according to AccuWeather.
68. 68?
No, I didn't want to know that. Why would you do that?
Because somebody, somewhere, is in trouble.
Now I feel worse.
Well, that's a gift of mine. I can take a bad situation and make it
worse.
Yeah, it's a gift.
The record high was 93 in 2014.
How about them apples? Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
2014, that's within our lifetime, John.
So I'm always doing this. I'm always looking at the 10-day forecast on my phone, looking for good news. And the 10-day scroll never hit 70 and hasn't. You do have, starting Friday, 52, 56, 62, with a lot of sunshine starting Friday. So if you had to pick your spot, I guess you'd pick it there. But man, that's not good. Carry the Load is an organization you may not know much about, but listen to this. Carry the Load is a support group for veterans that started just in 2011 when a group of veterans realized that the day had turned into another day of work, a day at the lake, a day for a barbecue, but we weren't really talking about what Veterans Day was about, right? I mean, those are all fine ways to spend a day, but let's take a minute to better consider the sacrifice that men and women make who are veterans. And I think they're onto something there. They are having a rally at the Federal Plaza in Chicago today at 4:30. Now, the idea, as I understand, we're about to take a break. We'll come back and visit with somebody from this organization. But they're going to have a little ceremony from 4:30 to 5, and then there's a walk that takes place. And it's a fundraiser, and it's an awareness raiser in advance of Veterans Day. They've raised over $20 million so far, and the money then goes to a continuum of care program for veterans who are struggling, and too many of them are, and education programs for veterans. Not exactly sure what that means, but we'll find out in just a minute. Also on the show today, let's talk a little bit about recreational marijuana. It's a coming. So if you are dry, this is something you're going to help me with, because I know you've smoked marijuana and I know you've driven, but I don't know how impaired you feel or are when you're driving while either high or while you were high. Like, what's the lag time? What's it like having smoked pot and then driven a car? I just need some feedback after 1:30. They're kicking this around in Springfield, you know, and it's a coming. I'm especially curious today about what we're going to do. I don't know, when somebody drives the car, they cross the line, maybe they get pulled over. You're not going to blow 0.08 on a breathalyzer. By the way, Steve, you said you think it might be 0.05, right?
I wasn't sure, but is it? Yeah.
All right. Producer LF, would you please look up what is the DUI level in Illinois? Is it 0.08 or 0.05? I'll answer that, and we'll talk about this Carry the Load program. Producer Olive just handed to me a list of the, according to NHL.com, NHL.com came up with a list of the 10 greatest American NHL players of all time. And this points to Lauren Lapka's problem with finding hockey players to give the Medal of Freedom to. By the way, at least two of them in their top 10 were namesakes of the Chicago Blackhawks. I'll get to that list in just a minute. Come on out to WGN-TV's White Sox Weather Day, May 14th. See Skilling's presentation followed by White Sox Indians. Tickets available at whitesox.com/WGM. Now, funeral planning can seem overwhelming, right? Making final arrangements ahead of time will actually help your family both emotionally and financially. Dignity Memorial Providers. This is an umbrella organization. They represent a bunch of the funeral homes that you've come to know and trust as community leaders throughout the Chicago area. That's Dignity Memorial, organization that represents a bunch of them, are exceptional, caring professionals who make these difficult conversations easier. Think about how you'd like to be remembered. A piece of poetry, a three-piece band, a sports theme because you or a loved one were really into that team. It's what they're known for, making it personal, make it a true reflection of who that individual is. If you want a traditional service, of course, these homes are also expert at that, too. Nice thing to know, too, is that if you ever move, your arrangements are transferable. Plan ahead, plan smart, and make it your own when you visit DignityChicago.com. DignityChicago.com. Says here at NHL.com, greatest American-born hockey player of all time, Mike Modano. Dallas North Stars, Minnesota North Stars, Dallas Stars. Brian Leetch, number 2. Brett Hull, number 3. Chris Chelios, number 4. Jeremy Renick, number 8. Patrick Kane, number 9. Not sure when this list came out. Kane might move up. But a lot of the names that you've come to know and love.
See, the tricky thing is I'm also trying to incorporate, you know, not just statistics, but what they do, you know, with charity and things like that. which some of them do a lot and some don't seem to do anything. So
yeah, right. Well, I think you can put your heart into this too. We'll need your full list by the close of business at 3 here on the John
I'm already like partially, maybe halfway there.
How is Kane not? I mean, Patrick Kane has to be on the list, right? I mean, you know, the thing is, he's still in the midst of his career, and some of these guys are not, but I think he can compete with them as an active player already. If he never played another down of hockey, it would still be worth putting his name on any American-born greatest NHL player of all time. That's for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
It's 125. Josh Lewis is on the phone. Josh, this is John Williams. You're on WGN Radio in Chicago. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, John.
So tell me a little bit about yourself, sir. I understand that you're a Marine Corps vet. You served with the 1st Battalion and the 5th Marines Regiment in Afghanistan and in Iraq. Is that correct?
That's correct. I was in Afghanistan. I was actually with 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines, but that's correct. Had the opportunity to serve my country in both locations.
Are you retired then from the military?
I am. I got out in 2011.
Thank you for your service and for all you're still doing. You're involved in this organization that a friend of mine, Jim Zwitt, is also going to participate in later this afternoon. Tell me about Carry the Load.
Carry the Load is a nonprofit organization that started in Dallas, and it provides active ways to connect Americans to the sacrifices made daily by our nation's military, veterans, first responders, and their families.
So it's in advance of Veterans Day, is that right?
Advance of Memorial Day, and we started out trying to restore the true meaning of Memorial Day. And in 2011, it consisted of kind of a two-day span, Sunday and Monday, Monday being the actual Memorial Day, and just walking and trying to remember those that we served with and that didn't get the opportunity to come back home. From there, we've moved on to Memorial May, which it has moved into the entire month of May as we celebrate those that made that ultimate sacrifice.
I see. So Memorial May instead of Memorial Day. Because I was curious why, say, you're doing something today when Memorial Day is near, but it's not here. But I guess that makes sense if we're going to take the month to do it and maybe build up some sense of appreciation, plan your Memorial Day so that it will take time to reflect on what these men and women have done, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we start with Memorial May by doing 3 national relay routes, one East Coast, one West Coast, and one Midwest, which is coming through your location today, and people can walk with today at 4:30.
So we'll start at the Federal Plaza downtown, and it's a couple-mile walk after some speeches and a little bit of a ceremony. It's a fundraiser, too, as I understand it. And don't people also walk for a veteran? Is that the idea?
That is. A lot of people come out and they'll carry pictures of loved ones that they've lost. They'll have shirts, they'll have flags, and they get to walk a mile, 2 miles, 5 miles with us, and we get to hear their stories over that time. And when we get to hear their stories, it allows them to kind of bring to life that person again that they lost.
Does your tour just stop in Chicago, or is it a continual walk from Chicago on to the coast or wherever?
It is a continual walk. They are going to make way all the way down to Dallas, Texas. So the Midwest route will walk a total of 3,900 miles, and it'll be joined the day before Memorial Day by the East Coast route, which is walking 3,000 miles, and the West Coast route, which is walking 4,600 miles.
So it's a relay then, and it's just coming through our city today, huh?
That's correct.
All right.
We'll be coming through over 55 cities all throughout May.
How can I give you guys some of my hard-earned money?
Please visit us at carrytheload.org. You can donate there. You can see where we will be walking. We'll see how close we'll come to your city. And as you said, we'll be there today and hope to see everybody out there.
Yeah, if you're not in Chicago, but you're listening to this Chicago radio station, where is the Carry the Load relay going to go? carrytheload.org. You can make a donation there, too. A very good friend of mine is a man named Jim Zwitt. I don't know if you've met him yet, but when you meet him, you will have met him. He's going to talk with you at 4:30 today.
I actually met Jim yesterday, and he's got the most impressive story to tell, and I don't want to give it away, but it's moving, and it will grip you when you hear that story today.
I often tell people, if you want to know the Jim Zwit story, just Google Jim Zwit, Z-W-I-T, and Mary Schmick, S-C-H-M-I-C-H, of course, the Pulitzer Prize-winning Chicago Tribune columnist. Her piece on Jim Zwit is one of the most moving things I have you ever will read. So props to both of them, and congratulations to you, Josh Lewis. Thanks for coming through our little city here, and I'll be over there. We'll see you at 4:30 this afternoon.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
What a pleasure, sir. He is a veteran who's going to be at the Federal Plaza today at 4:30 along with that Zwit guy.
The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center: cloudy, cooler, some showers around today, 52 the high, 45 the low tonight with showers, and then tomorrow, showers, maybe a scattered storm, and a high of 61. Right now at O'Hare, it is 50, Midway 49. It's 50 at Morton Grove and 45 at Chicago's Lakefront. I'm Steve Bertrand in the WGN Radio Newsroom, and these are the stories that matter on 720 WGN.
Thank you, Steve Bertrand. You know, there was a story in, I'm reading from a site in California. It's called Press Democrat. I don't know if that represents a newspaper, Steve, or some sort of advocacy organization, but it's about what they did in California when they legalized marijuana for recreational purposes. And the question is, what do you do if people are smoking pot legally in Illinois? I presume you can't smoke pot while you're driving, but say you smoked pot and then stopped smoking pot, how long do you have to wait before you get in a car? What's the 0.08 of marijuana going to be? There's no breathalyzer test for that. If a cop pulls you over and you were changing lanes or doing something that he thought was erratic, you're not going to blow anything unless you also have alcohol in your system.
How long have we had the breathalyzer? 25 years, 20 years?
I'll bet, yeah.
I mean, we didn't always have it, and there were, you know, DUI charges then as well.
Well, what if it was, okay, so maybe then it's just, you know, the field sobriety test. Can you touch your nose? Can you walk a line? Can you stand on one foot?
Which isn't nearly as reliable, I'm sure.
Yeah, right. I think that that's a little subjective. For instance, have you tried to stand on one foot for more than 30 seconds?
Not in a few years.
You should try. My sons and I did this a lot when they were younger, and Brenda and I were doing it the other day because it was raining. But just try and stand on one foot and see if you can do it for 30 seconds. Very difficult to do. I know what you're thinking. John, I could stand all day on one foot. If you get to 30 seconds, you will be the exception. So there's something for you to do later on. In the meantime, what should it be in Illinois? And I'm thinking, well, I know plenty of you have toked and driven. And I'm wondering, I've heard people say they are a more conscientious driver after having had a couple or having smoked pot, because now I don't want to get pulled over. I'm a better driver. I don't know if marijuana sort of dulls you, though, the way alcohol does. So even though you might be more conscientious, you just physically aren't as good behind the wheel. I don't know what the experience is for pot. My number is 312-981-7200, and I'm just looking for a little feedback for a legislator here, because they're going to have to make this decision. They actually do measure milligrams, parts per billion in a liter of blood. I mean, they can measure to see if you have THC in your system still. But here's another thing, too. That THC will stay in your system much longer than it's actually impacting your ability to drive. So now what do we do? I mean, do you use that as a measuring stick? And by the way, in Las Vegas, it's vastly different than it is in California by a factor of two. So you say, okay, well then, what's the right amount? For instance, in almost every state, it's 0.08. But it's not like that way for pot at all. Don, you're on WGN Radio. What did you want to say? You're on the air. Hi.
Hey, John. First, I'd say I'm an advocate of legalizing marijuana. But just knowing from my own personal experience, you should not drive after smoking whatsoever.
What for you would be the... How long would you have to wait before you felt like you were okay to drive?
Oh, at least 3 hours, I'd say.
Yeah. I guess it depends on how high you got.
I have done it in my past, but I know that I've driven places and just plain not remembered driving, sitting back going, my goodness, I don't remember doing it at all.
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
I mean, you're impaired.
Yeah.
And it's just like drinking. You just shouldn't be driving while smoking.
Yeah, okay. I'll take that for sure, Don. Thank you for the call. Let's go to, is it Stan? Is that who I'm going to? Yoo-hoo, Olive. Am I taking line one? Line one, okay. And is it Stan? You're on WGN. Hi. Hi, Stan, are you? Stan, are you?
Yeah.
Hi, you're on the air.
How you doing today? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've always heard in the past, having the officers and the family and stuff like that, one of the tests back in the day was checking if you can cross your eyes. If you're high, you cannot cross your eyes. And these days, you hear a couple towns doing the saliva test. They ask you to open your mouth, they take a Q-tip, and then they put that into a bottle, and if it turns a color, they know you're on, you know, you've got THC in your mouth and your system or what have you. The only problem with for that to me is you're giving up your DNA to any officer that asked for it.
Yeah, they describe that test that you're talking about. It takes about 5 minutes for the results to come in. For some reason, it's expensive. I don't know if they do that where they pull you over. They send it to, I don't know, they run it over to the cop shop or whatever. But here's the problem with it. They describe it as too invasive. For you to have to do that for a police officer, some states, some people think that's asking too much. I don't know if that's more invasive than asking you to blow into a device, but that bothers some people.
Didn't they take your blood before the blow devices?
Boy, that seems... Really? Would they just do a pinprick, I guess, huh, Steve? They
I don't remember.
Open up
I
a vein.
Could be wrong about that, but it seems to me like that happened. Because it's a blood alcohol... I don't remember. I thought they did.
Yeah. I wonder what the lag time for you would be, sir. How long would you say between having smoked... And again, it depends on how much you take, but... What would be the lag time?
I'm told in here they still take blood if you refuse the test.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Well,
I have no sympathy for these people, but seems to me like that is pretty invasive.
Yes.
Okay, thanks for the call. We'll go from him to Pat. You're on WGN Radio. Hi, Pat. You're on the air.
Hi. Good afternoon. How you doing?
Talk to me.
You're talking about smoking weed?
Yep.
Weed will stay in your system. If they do a urine test on you, it will stay for 3 days. They do a hair follicle test on you, it will stay for 30 days. So you don't have to show impairment for someone to be on weed. All you have to do is have a probable cause, whether your bloodshot eyes, a strong odor of cannabis coming from your person.
But I don't think that should warrant you getting a ticket, right?
It could warrant you getting a DUI. They do a urine analysis and a blood work. Unfortunately, there's no machine out on the system now that can test it. But sure, why not? I mean, you smoke weed this morning. It still impairs you, and whether it's legal drugs or illegal drugs, you're not supposed to be driving. Put it in your system.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call. I'm not an expert on this, but I don't think everybody would agree with you. I think that after a period of time, even if it's still in your hair or in your blood or in your system, quote unquote, a lot of people feel like, okay, now I've waited long enough and I'm okay to drive. That's why I'm asking. Dean, you're on WGN. What's your thought?
Did you say Dean?
Yeah, I did. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just was wanting to say about the difference between... drinking alcohol and smoking marijuana, driving-wise, I mean, people who drink alcohol, they're reckless and speed and everything, but if you smoke marijuana, you pretty much drive a lot slower, and you are more cautious. But and the time frame, a new smoker, you know, yeah, they'll be out of it for, you know, quite a while. But someone who's smoked for a while, you can smoke pot and within an hour or two, you're safe to be on the road. Because, you know, it's like alcohol, your system, you know, you get used to it after a while.
I appreciate your call. Dean, from you to Glenn, you're on WGN. Glenn, what's your thought? You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Jen. Thanks for taking my call. There's a new legal ruling. If you're involved in a car accident and if they don't need your permission to draw your blood for anything, if you come in the emergency room, I work for a university hospital. So if you cause bodily harm to yourself or someone else, they have the right to take your blood automatically. It's
I guess
legal.
That makes sense. Yes, and you're there in the hospital, too. But if you were just driving erratically and there was no crash, the cop pulls you over, do you know what the rule is for that?
No, but I know from a medical standpoint, if you're brought in the emergency room and let's say you're totally out of it or you're not awake, they can just take your blood. But I don't know about being out on the road.
Yeah, I got it. Hey, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate you joining us. Judy, you're on WGN. What's your thought, Judy? You're on the air.
My thought is we have police and detectives in our family, and I just want to let you know that when you sign your name on your driver's license, there's paperwork that you sign. You're basically, you know, driving is a privilege. It's not a right. And you're signing a document there that says, you know, you're waiving your rights. And, yes, the caller before, they don't take blood, you know, out on the street. The cops don't do it. They take you to an emergency room, and the nurses draw blood for a possible DUI. You know, it has happened to people I know. Now, some nurses you see in the news, they, you know, sometimes refuse to do that, and then it gets all over the news and things like that. But, driving is a privilege, like I said. We waive our, basically, we don't have any rights. But unfortunately, you have to dig into the research on that. But, it's unbelievable.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. It still seems to me, though, thanks for the call, Judy, that, right, you shouldn't drive impaired, but you have to judge somebody's impairment. And it'll be a subjective decision, it sounds like, right now for the cop to determine if you've had too much marijuana and therefore you're now going to get a ticket. At least we've come to accept what 0.08 means, right? It's a measurement, and if you blow past 0.08, then you're going to get the ticket. I think we've all sort of come to terms with that. But we don't have something like that for marijuana, and that's going to be an issue when this law goes into effect. I have been talking off the air today to one of the state legislators who's behind it, and I think she's going to be able to join us a little after 2 o'clock. I wonder what her answer to this question is going to be. We'll do that in about 20 minutes. So just another call or two on this, and then we'll pick it back up in a little while. Jimmy, you're on WGN. What's your thought? You're on the air.
Hey, John, how's it going? So good. Here's the problem. What she just said was there's no way to test somebody on it, but here's the other problem. Now, marijuana stays in your system for a while. So if you're out on a Saturday night and you smoke, if you get in a car accident on Tuesday afternoon, it's still going to be in your system. So how do they judge, you know, whether you were under the influence right at that time?
Right. I don't have an answer to that. But I don't think it's fair to say just because you have it in your system, you are therefore an impaired driver. Right?
I agree, but how are they going to fix it?
That's the question we'll ask in about 20 minutes. Thanks for the call, Jimmy. It's 150. This is WGN.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Or
here's John Williams.
I farm it out. This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio weekdays from 1 to 3, Saturdays 10 to noon on social. WGN King John. I want to be king someday. Paperwork's tied up in Cook County. Don't miss our Mincing Rascals podcast, judged best in the city of Chicago. I believe our reign expires Friday. I think that's when the Headliners Club will announce the 2019 Best Podcast in Chicago Award, or at least the nominees will be announced. So we'll see how we do there. It's a really good podcast. We'll drop another one on Thursday. And the one the gang did while I was away last Thursday is, of course, still there, too. The Mincing Rascals are free. Keep Going, 10 Ways to Stay Creative in Good Times and Bad is a new book by Austin Kleon, the artist whose books you may have read, whose videos you may have seen online, whose TED Talks you may have heard or even witnessed. He's going to be at the Harold Washington Library this evening at 6 o'clock, and he's in our studio right now. Austin, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me. I'm great.
Is that it? No, was it TEDx Talk? What was it?
TEDx Talk, yeah, in Kansas City,
TED Talk?
I believe. Oh, you know, it's local. It's a local TED Talk. So,
what do you do for a living?
I write books, and I give talks.
But they're kind of, I don't know, how would you describe your slice of the market? What kind of books do you write?
Oh, I write picture books for all ages is kind of how I like to I like to describe them. I'm a writer who draws, and so my books are, I like to think that they're fun. You know, they have a lot of pictures in them.
You wrote Steal Like an Artist, Show Your Work, and Steal Like an Artist Journal. Well, are those all separate books? Yeah.
Yeah.
But what's the one, Newspaper Blackout?
Newspaper Blackout's the first one. That's a book of poetry. And what I do is I take the New York Times, I take an article from the New York Times, I make a couple of, I make a boxes around words that pop out at me, and they turn those words into little funny phrases or sayings, and then I black out everything. I don't need it. Sort of looks like if the CIA did haiku. Or the Mueller report, if you've seen that lately.
I was just going to say, what it is what if randomly the one of the redacted Mueller report pages was insightful or
poetic
or philosophical? So what would an example be where you black out words top to bottom, and now I'm skipping over here, down there, because it's all blacked out, but there's a word there. What would one of your poems be that you found hidden in an article?
Well, I've been married for about 12 years, so I like to write a lot of poems about marriage. There's one called What is Marriage? And the poem says, marriage is two people in love standing in the same bathroom.
Now, that sentence did not exist in that article, but those words in that order did.
Yes.
And if you blacked out everything in between. So what's the process then? Do you think, I want to find something about the intimacy of marriage? Or how do you get from A to B?
Well, it depends on how many markers you huff before you do it. But it's really funny. It's almost like a Ouija board or something. You know, it's like it's interesting. If I go to the page with a preconceived notion, and this is true of all kinds of writing, if I go to the page with a preconceived notion, I won't get something as good as if I just look at that big block of text and let stuff pop out at me. And then I don't want to be too highfalutin about it, but it's sort of like Michelangelo looking at the block of marble, you know, trying to figure out what's inside.
That is very highfalutin.
It's very highfalutin.
I want you to take that back. Michelangelo somewhere is going, wait, I chiseled marble.
Right. This kid takes a marker to the newspaper.
Are you kidding me? But I would imagine there's a word or phrase that seems evocative somehow, and you go, okay, I can work with that.
Yes, and then I call that an anchor word. Like, you zoom in on that word, and then you start looking. It's like one of those word search puzzles you used to do in the back of the car on a road trip, like... And then you move back and forth and up and down, and you try to find words that you can connect to that anchor word, and pretty soon you have something.
So give me another example of a bit of philosophy or poetry that you found embedded in a New York Times article.
So this one's called Overheard on the Titanic, and it says, I mean, yes, we're sinking, but the music is exceptional.
How fortunate for you that that article was written, that your eyes found it, that you found that poetry embedded in there. Could I do this? Could anybody do this?
Oh, elementary school kids do this all across the nation. Teachers have kind of like really gotten into blackout poetry, and they write to me and they send me wonderful pictures online. And they always tell me the same thing, which is the quote unquote worst students are the best at blackout poetry. I it warmed my heart the other week. A teacher said, man, you should see a couple of teenage boys light up when they get to make poems and read them to each other. It's crazy.
I wonder if that begets then original poetry that isn't blackout.
I would hope so. I would hope that blackout poetry is like a gateway drug, you know, to other poetry.
Keep going. 10 ways to stay creative in good times and bad is the sort of book that would spring from a mind like yours. But what's this about then?
This is a plain old book. This is a book about how to sustain a creative passion or career over time, especially in the face of distracting or disheartening times. This is the first book I wrote that, because I actually need to read it. The other books sort of happened by different kinds of happenstance, but this was a book that I desperately needed to read. I felt like a couple of years ago, like a lot of my creative colleagues, I sort of became very distracted by the climate of the country and social media and the sort of state of the world. And then add to that, I sort of been doing creative work for like a decade, and it wasn't getting any easier. And I mistakenly thought it was going to get easier over time. So those two things together sort of made me want to go out and seek wisdom from other artists and my own practice. And I came up with this list of 10 things that'll sort of keep you going in good times or bad.
Is this a prescription for artists or Americans?
I think all types of people who want to find like a passion or work that's meaningful. People just trying to do something meaningful with their life. I don't think it's just for creative people or people who think they're creative.
Some of the chapter headlines, and there are 10 of them, as you just described, are build a bliss station, make gifts, the ordinary plus extra attention equals extraordinary. Slay the art monsters. When in doubt, tidy up. Demons hate fresh air. Plant your garden. What are you doing here?
I think I'm trying to give people a list of things to sort of get back on what other path they might have fallen off of. You know, this is sort of a corrective book.
Yeah, but what if I'm an accountant or a mechanic? I mean, suppose I do something, I'm a farmer.
Yeah.
What do you say, what does this have to do with that, right?
I really feel like we have this mistaken notion that just because, you know, creative isn't attached to your job title, that you're not supposed to have some sort of interior creative life, you know, like farmers, mechanics, the ones I know are some of the most creative people I meet.
If you're a farmer or mechanic, I know I just implied that and I don't mean to, but I wonder how it translates.
Yeah.
I can see if you're an artist or a talk show host, yeah, this is integral to your job, but maybe you could be a dull farmer and still be effective.
I think that creativity is a tool that we all possess, that we all have access to, basically. And I think that some of us, it's like working out. You know, we work out more and we get bigger muscles. But I think creativity is this thing that we all can access, and you can use it to reorganize your living room. You can paint the Sistine Chapel with it, or you can build a weapon of mass destruction. You know?
So give me an example of an application of one of the chapters in a life.
Yeah. My favorite chapter is probably the most, you know, plainest advice, which is to take a walk. The Demons Hate Fresh Air is the name of the chapter, and it refers to something the film director Ingmar Bergman said to his daughter. He said, in the morning, get up and take a walk, because the demons hate fresh air. We're all sort of existing in this moment now where if you're on your phone, the world seems not worth living in or worth saving. You know, it feels like a garbage fire. And then you take a walk, you know, you go out on the street, and yeah, there's some problems, but there's also skies and trees and your neighbors, and life is more beautiful when you take a walk. And you get all sorts of ideas when you're out on walks. And so I think everyone should put down their phones and take a walk.
I was waiting for the L yesterday, and there was a big crowd because there was some violence down the line. The police were there. The trains were running slow, so the platform I was on was packed. And I was looking at hundreds of people all facing the same direction, the train tracks. And at one point, every single person in my line of sight was looking at their feet. They had their phone in their hand, and they were looking down. And I thought, I've never seen a more isolated group of people standing shoulder to shoulder.
So close.
And I don't know what they were supposed to do. Like, in my perfect world, they're not doing that, and they're engaging in spontaneous conversation. And I don't know that they did that in the 1950s either. But it did look like a very lonely group of people.
One of my favorite artists who has Chicago roots, she doesn't live here now, but she used to, I think she used to do something for The Reader. Her name's Linda Berry. And she talks about how the phone has given us so much, but it's also taken away so much from us in terms of, you know, we used to get bored every once in a while. And boredom is the great, it's the great thing that leads to creativity. It's when you get really bored, then you start coming up with really interesting stuff to do. And so I think as much of as the phone has given us, I think it's also taken a lot away. And so I'm a big advocate of airplane mode isn't just for the airplane. I think airplane mode can be a way of life. You switch your phone into airplane mode, and all of a sudden you got this freedom because nobody can get to you.
In our studio is Austin Kleon. His latest book is Keep Going. One of the chapters is a headline is a line from A Groundhog Day. And I want to play the clip and then ask you what you're talking about when we come back. But this is the scene from which you draw in your book. Go ahead, Elif, play that.
I was in the Virgin Islands once. I met a girl. We ate lobster, drank pina coladas. At sunset, We made love like sea otters. That was a pretty good day. Why couldn't I get that day over and over?
I think you as a glass is half empty kind of guy, am I right?
What would you do if you were stuck in one place and every day was exactly the same and nothing that you did mattered?
Bill Murray, Groundhog Day. Okay, so you draw on that to say what after this? In our studio, Austin Kleon. Keep Going, 10 Ways to Stay Creative in Good Times and Bad is his latest book. He's talking about it tonight at the Harold Washington Library. Can folks still see you at 6 o'clock tonight? Is it still possible to get tickets?
Oh, yeah. Come on down.
So we played the Bill Murray clip from Groundhog Day, where he, and in fact, the chapter in your book, I believe it's the, is it the first or second chapter?
It's the first chapter, and it's titled Every Day is Groundhog Day.
So what are you talking about here?
I think we all feel like sometimes our life is out of our control and life becomes very repetitive. You know, like we're just sort of, like whenever I go out to my studio, I walk out to the garage behind my house where I work, and I go in, I close the door, and I sit down, and I look at a blank page, and I think to myself, didn't I just do this yesterday? You know, the creative, all lives have a certain amount of repetition to them, but I think what Phil discovers, which is so wonderful, is that even though his life is ultimately out of his control, like he's repeating the same day over and over, he discovers that each day he gets is a gift, and it's the meaning of his life is how he fills those days that he gets. And I think that's the point that we all sort of have to come to, is that even though we might feel stuck in these loops, stuck in these sort of, you know, creative ruts every once in a while, it's really how we fill our days that provides the meaning for our life. And I think all great creative artists sort of have this sort of daily practice in which they do sort of go back to a blank page every day, and they do sort of do the same thing every day, but that's an opportunity for them to get the good stuff.
But I'm also still, again, thinking about people whose jobs or lives aren't inherently creative. They work on an assembly line at a factory or something like that. And I'm glad to hear you saying what I think is, even if that's the case, what's more important is how do you fill your life with things that make you happy? That's a creative process. How do you find or maintain that?
Exactly. How do you find and maintain some sort of creativity in your everyday life when you are away from the line, you know, or when you're in your personal life, or when you're at home, or even when you're on your lunch break, you know? Because I think lunch breaks are this wonderful opportunity to sort of disengage and do something creative, whether it's just take a walk or spend a little time with a notebook or even listening to music.
What's a piece of advice you have that people come back to you time and again for and say, wow, what a game changer? Thank you for that.
I think for this book, one that people keep bringing up over and over is forget the noun, do the verb. Now, what does that mean? Well, we all know people who want to be writers, but that writing thing, it's a little tricky, right? And I think that, you know, if you forget about the job title you want and you think about the work to be done, so forget about being a novelist, just worry about writing. I think that will take you someplace further and far more interesting than obsessing about this noun that you want to be. Because if you focus on the verb, you know, if you just write, maybe you discover that you're a poet, not a novelist. Maybe you discover a talent for screenwriting.
Or maybe you discover that you're never going to make any money doing either, but don't you enjoy writing or imagining a screenplay and putting it to paper?
You sure? Yeah. Like maybe you discover that, wow, I really do love filling that journal in the morning before I go off to work. It really juices me up.
I was just on vacation and I was trying to every day journal what I did that day.
Cool.
Including what I wore. And my wife said, why are you putting that down? Or somebody asked that. And I said, well, because when I think back on trips I've taken, I packed up clothes, I ate food, I did these things, and I want to try and remember as much of the experience as I can. Your clothes are a very personal part of your day. So I put down, I had on my coral pants with gray shoes and a print shirt. And every time I try to do something like that, I discover that it's difficult for me to finish even a week's worth of it. That it is it's a task.
Yeah.
And it's easier to not do the task. I so enjoy having done it. But I close with this. Just give me a thought on the discipline it requires to do these things that will make your life more fulfilled.
I just think of it like doing push-ups, you know? Like, we all kind of know that, like, well, if you want to get ripped, like, you got to do your push-ups every day, you know? And it's the same for creative work. Like, if you don't show up every day, you're not going to have the muscles to do it, and you're not going to find your great works.
You should do your show tonight without your shirt on. Are you ripped?
No.
But you are here.
There's a reason why I write.
The book is ripped. It's called Keep Going. It's a little 5-inch by 6-inch blue paperback, if you will, with pretty laminated pages and his art of sorts in there. It's by Austin Kleon. It's subtitled 10 Ways to Stay Creative in Good Times and Bad. It's the right book at the right time, Austin. Thanks for coming into our studio.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to Chicago. We're talking about the president handing out the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Tiger Woods yesterday, to which Lauren Lapka immediately said, no hockey players? Because we went through everything from Bush 41 all the way to present, and not a one hockey player has received the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Baseball players, golfers, football players, basketballers, that sort of thing.
Yeah, everybody, it seems.
But a hockey player, and I'm assuming that that has to go to an American, but some of you pointed out that Roberto Clemente is not, I don't think he was an American citizen.
I don't think you have to be an American to get it.
Because I was saying maybe the problem is there's no hockey players because all the great hockey players are from Canada and elsewhere.
No, the problem is presidents can't skate.
Well, somebody said, what about Bobby Hull and Wayne Gretzky? Elif, where, producer Elif? Where is Wayne Gretzky? Where was Wayne Gretzky born?
Wayne Gretzky was born in Brantford, Canada.
Okay, so he's not an American citizen.
Both Canadian. So I picked my top three that are American-born in case that was
right. That was the premise, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what have you got?
Well, based on just about 30 minutes of research, really getting into it, because you can easily look at the statistics and it's easy to, you know, just know the players that play now that are great. But I wanted to look at what else they do, you know, in their spare time and if they've been good in the community, you know, no trouble and things like that. So my top pick would
be... This is the Lapka Medal of Freedom, after all. So it's not just ice time. Okay, go ahead.
So Mike Modano would be the first choice. He's from Michigan. He founded the Mike Modano Foundation, and it helps children and families that are affected by child abuse. So that's huge. And he's also just known to work with a lot of charitable organizations. Plus, he's like the all-time goal scoring and points leader amongst American-born players. And I didn't see anything about any trouble with the law or anything like that. So
Modano won.
First-class citizen right there. Yeah. And then Pat LaFontaine would be number two. So he has the best points per game average at 1.17 among American-born players. He's from St. Louis, and he founded the Companions Encourage Foundation, and this actually builds interactive game rooms in children's hospitals. So that's also very nice.
Who's number three?
Three would be Mike Richter. He's from Pennsylvania. He's considered to be one of the most successful American-born goalies. He went to Yale after he retired. He's a founding partner with the Healthy Planet Partners. He does a lot of work with resource efficiency and, you know, how we can help our planet. He's also chairman of Aspen Institute's Sport and Society Program for improving quality and quantity of athletic participation in society. So really getting athletes involved in their communities and doing
well. You kind of stuck your neck out there, Lauren, with no Renick, no Chelios, no Kaner.
I know. I didn't want to be biased. And
boy, you were not. Throw a Patrick Kane in there. Promise me he's number four.
Okay, yeah, he's definitely number four.
Thank you. It's 2:43 on WGN. So Sandra Bland is the story that Steve's been talking about. Kim will probably be talking about it as well. The Naperville woman who, in Texas, near, what is it, University of Texas, El Paso, A&M, was pulled over. She was arrested and then eventually found hung in her cell. I don't know if the circumstances of her arrest had anything to do with her taking her life in that jail cell. But now we have the video and audio of her being arrested because she had her camera on. She was using her phone to capture the video and audio as she was being taken out of the car. And I think these are parallel tracks. It was a tragedy what happened in that cell. And it's another tragedy, I think, what happens in circumstances like this. The officer eventually lost his job as a result of the way he handled this case. I don't know that one leads to the other. I don't know that this sort of mistreatment has anything to do with somebody who will end their life a few days later while they're being held. But the audio is disturbing because she's sitting there in her car and she did not use her turn signal. She changes lanes and the officer pulls her over. This is part of that exchange.
Get out of the car now.
Why am I being apprehended? You trying to give me a ticket for your failure?
Get out of the car.
Why am I being apprehended? You just opened my car door. You just opened my car door. So you're threatening to drag me out of my own car.
Get out of the car.
And then you're going to stun me?
I will light you up. Get out.
Wow.
Now.
Wow.
Get out of the car.
Really, for a failure to signal. You're doing all of this for a failure to signal.
Get over there.
Right, yeah. Yeah, let's take this to court. Let's do it. For a failure to signal. Yep, for a failure to signal.
Get off the phone.
On my school.
Get off the phone.
I'm not on the phone. I have a right to record. This is my property. This is my property. Sir?
Put your phone down. Right now.
Get out of the car or I will light you up. He's pointing almost point blank his taser at her. You know, I know where this story goes because we've just had this conversation too many times. On the one hand, she should cooperate with the police. Even if it's profiling or even if it's not profiling, but it's just not necessary. If the police officer says do that, do that. But by the same token, for crying out loud, officer, what are you doing here? It just seems so utterly unnecessary. I literally have my feet in both camps on this one. And there's just too many instances like this. That audio has been released to a lot of us today. I guess it's been available for a while. We hadn't paid any attention to it. I do not see the connection from that to what ultimately happened to her. But that story is in the news. And I don't have much more to say about that except that I think the officers get angry in situations like that. And I think they overreact as much as the people inside the cars do. It's 2:45. We're going to talk to one of the state legislators or their field directors after a quick break, Al, if that's the plan. We're talking about marijuana being legal in Illinois. The question is, what will determine DUI if you're pulled over and you've been smoking marijuana? There's no .08 for marijuana, so how are we going to determine that? I think I have an answer after this. Senator Heather Staines joins us on WGN Radio. Senator, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks for having me.
What district do you represent? What's your area? Where are you?
Well, it's the district number 7, and it's the northernmost lakefront district in the city of Chicago. So Rogers Park, Edgewater, Uptown, Lincoln Square, Ravenswood, that area.
What are you saying about medical or recreational marijuana? Where are you on this? What does your bill generally say?
Well, the bill generally says, you know, prohibition hasn't worked, so we legalize it for somebody 21 years and older to purchase in a dispensary. And that dispensary, they would check your ID, make sure you're over 21, and then you would know you're getting a safe product that doesn't have rat poisoning or fentanyl or anything else in it. You know exactly what you're consuming. It would be labeled very clearly and carefully, and thus, you know, move folks out of the illicit market. We have 800,000 people in Illinois who use regularly, and over 95% of those folks purchase right now on the illicit market.
Is this being driven by finances? Are you doing this because you think this will help the state budget?
No, that just follows. I'm doing it because I think it's better public policy. I just think prohibition has not worked. Teens report easy access to cannabis from their street corner guys. 4 out of 5 teens in Illinois say that. And then you also have the situation, and they're getting unsafe products. And it's also a hugely problematic history with the war on drugs and how we've over-criminalized these kinds of things, and particularly for black and brown communities. In Illinois, even though usage is the same by race, black and brown people are 7 times more likely to have been arrested and have some something happen to them with a criminal justice system over the use of cannabis. It's just been outrageously unjust.
I'm a little confused by this, what I've been reading about the black and brown communities and how we need to do more to encourage or enable them to grow plants or have the retail points in those areas. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So Illinois, we right now have medical cannabis program is operational here in Illinois. We have 20 cultivation centers and we have 55 dispensaries. It's considered a very tightly regulated program, and that meaning we don't have product diverted out into the illicit market. That said, it's a very non-diverse. It's not at all diverse ownership set of folks who are in the business right now. You don't have ownership by black and brown folks in our medical cannabis industry. So one of our goals now in going towards adult use for cannabis is to maintain the gold standard that we have and how well it's regulated, but also become the gold standard and being able to actually get a very diverse set of owners in the industry. So we're taking a lot of steps to try to ensure that we get a lot more diversity in the program.
I guess as a business proposition, that makes sense. I have to tell you, I shook my head a little bit when I was reading a comment, I think, from the governor along those lines. And I thought, if we said that we need to, because everybody has equal access to alcohol, get more alcohol stores in black and brown communities in the South and West Side, I don't know that that's going to help anybody. I don't think anybody is saying that we should all therefore take marijuana. We should give people, I guess, equal access to it. But I don't understand the idea of empowering a community by giving them greater access to something that's really not actually good.
No, we're talking about ownership of the businesses. We're not talking about where these dispensaries are located and who has access to purchasing. We're talking about if people want to get into the business and own either a cultivation center, or we're creating new craft cultivation centers, a dispensary, a transportation license, that people of color should also have a chance of getting those licenses. It has nothing to do with actually accessing the product like you're talking about.
Yeah.
We're talking about who actually has the ability to own a business in the industry.
Well, that makes sense. What about, you know, another sort of question we've been kicking around today is, how will we know if somebody is impaired? It's 0.08 with alcohol, and we understand how that works. How will the police or I as a citizen know if I've had too much?
Great question. So when we did the decriminalization bill for under 10 grams of cannabis a couple years ago, we set in place standards of DUI. It's 5 parts of per nanogram in your blood and 10 parts per nanogram in your saliva of THC. So we have a standard in place. So if somebody, say, is driving and there's concern that they may be under the influence, you can still, of course, first the police officer who pulls them over can, of course, do the field sobriety testing. If they do then think that there's impairment, you can have a drug recognition expert come and do the more official, yes, we believe you're impaired. And there are now roadside swab tests available that you can, in fact, test for a whole slew of different kinds of illegal drugs through that swab sample. So there's different ways of being able to do that right now, which did not exist a couple years ago.
Well, what will happen then if I get pulled over? Will I be asked to spit in a cup or take a saliva swab?
It's a swab, I believe. I think field sobriety testing would come first, but it's a swab. It's not, roadside, you would only be asked to do something that's non-invasive like that.
A swab.
And one of the aspects that we're putting in the bill is some of the revenue streams that we generate, should we go live with this, will go towards law enforcement to help them train more officers on becoming drug recognition experts, and for purchasing those roadside tests that are now becoming available.
One last thing. I don't know much about this, but I wonder if some people will say, you know, at that level, I'm still fine. I'm not impaired. I wonder how subjective this is.
You got to do serious public education. People should not, absolutely not, and it's highly illegal, will stay that way, drive while under the influence if you've used cannabis, period. And I do believe that we will have money going towards public education, just like teens. It's not good for developing brains. We want teens to have not be able to access this. They say they have easy access now. We want to do good public education about why they should not be using cannabis, why it's not good for their brain development. Just like we want people to understand that they should not be driving under the influence. We've had good education campaigns about that around alcohol and driving. We need to do the same around cannabis.
I hope you can visit us in studio sometime, Senator. This is a big topic, as you well know, and I'd like to talk more about it down the road. Swing by our studio sometime soon.
I would welcome that. Thank you.
Senator Heather Staines. Okay, 257. Stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Roe and Anna, too, coming up.
The numbers are in.
WGN Plus is where Chicago comes for podcasts.
Here's what's going on with WGN Plus. So in case your dad missed the joke opportunity over the weekend, Rebel Forest Radio wanted to say, may the 4th be with you.
Oh, Dad, come on.
Shypedia is previewing the upcoming gala from the organization 100 Black Men in Chicago, and Walter Jacobson is pleasantly surprised about the first new stances from the mayor-elect, Lori Lightfoot. Look them up. WGN Plus on iTunes and Google Play.
This is Rocom, the outdoors, that perfect spot, a place to relax, catch a breath of fresh air, or just stare out over a cup of coffee or a glass of wine. What if you had that every day, not just on vacation? With Arquidec, you can. Your dream spot could be your deck, or maybe your screen porch or patio with an outdoor kitchen or a fire pit. Yes, fire pit. You've earned it. And Arquidec's design professionals create solutions that blend form, function, and affordability. Go to their website, architectofchicagoland.com. Get inspired. Your backyard might not seem like much now, but Arquidec's designers will transform your space into a personal refuge. Why Arquidec? Because their professional staff is focused on design, quality, and service. They're the best creator of outdoor spaces in Chicago. Take it from me. It's the best thing I've ever done for my home. Don't miss out. Start planning to enjoy your summer right now. It all starts with a visit to architectofchicagoland.com. That's architectofchicagoland.com.
I'm Bennett Wakenight. Tune in tomorrow morning to The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich at 5:38 to hear Building Business Around Town, presented by Associated Bank. You'll hear how Cardone Custom Homes is changing the home building landscape and what Pat Cardone is doing to make the process simple and straightforward.
If you drop what you're doing right now and call the folks at Next Door and Window, you get 40% off installation of windows and doors and 18 months of interest-free financing. Call 1-800-NEXT-DOOR. Schedule your free estimate. Next Door and Window offers it all. Wood, vinyl, fiberglass, windows and doors. I know there's a lot of companies out there. Now, this spring, you're thinking, we are going to fix that door, that window, or replace it. Who do you call? I promise you, you'll be happy if you call Next Door and Window. No pressure. They'll work with your budget. They'll work with your timeline. They put the Marvin windows in our guest bedroom. We are thrilled about everything about that whole process. And now you get 18 months of interest-free financing and 40% off the installation. You owe it to yourself to at least call 1-800-NEXT-DOOR, 1-800-NEXT-DOOR, or visit 1-800-NEXT-DOOR.com. We did not talk about the Met Gala. By the way, are they preset over there? Because...